Hey, you found me. Thanks, guys. This is Scott Anderson. Welcome to my new podcast. We were formerly the Warrior Academy Yoga Podcast, and I want to welcome you to our first episode. And on this episode, I had the great privilege to speak to an amazing woman. Her name is Leah Pearlman, and she's the creator of Dharma Comics. So I want you to go check out dharmacomics.com so that as we go through this audio, you won't get the opportunity to see her comics and get a feel for what she does while we're talking. But I'm telling you right now, it's really special. And we had a great conversation about her process, about yoga, and a lot of other great things. So enjoy the podcast.
Are we fucking ready? Roll cameras. Action!
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here for the new podcast. My name is Scott Anderson. I want to welcome all the warriors, Dharma seekers, and general badasses out there who are looking to try to optimize and live a happier, healthier, stronger life. I had the great pleasure of going to a TED Talk yesterday, and I brought one of those speakers back to the studio with me. Her name is Leah Pearlman. She is the creator of Dharma Comics. So I want to tell you right now, if you don't like to be happy, if you don't like to laugh, then just turn this fucker off right now, because this won't be the podcast for you. This woman is really special. Leah, how are you?
I'm great.
We had a ton of audio problems, and there's just gear all over the table as we tried to get this set up so that we could spend this time talking before you head back out of town. But to just bring our listeners up to speed, you came into Denver. And you're originally from Denver, right?
Yes, born and raised, Colorado native.
Native, fist bump, boom. So what part of town did you grow up in?
I grew up in Park Hill.
Park Hill, mm-hmm. Right on. I grew up in Golden.
Oh, that's...
I was a country boy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I grew up with the daily smell of the Coors Brewery.
Okay.
And now that I live in Denver and I go back to Golden, I'm like, oh my God, it smells weird over here with this brewery. And I never noticed that when I was a kid.
I never noticed that. Actually, I never associated Golden with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever go to the Coors Brewery?
No, I don't think I did.
No?
Yeah.
One of these days, I'm going to show you where the back door is so you don't have to take the tour. You can just go straight to the bar and drink beer.
Great.
In case you ever wanted to do that. Uh-huh. But how long have you been gone how long have you not lived in Denver?
Well, I left Denver to go to college, and I haven't moved back technically. In the last 5 years, I've been spending a lot more time here.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you live in Berkeley right now?
Yep.
And... So basically, you came into Denver to give a TED Talk, and I asked you before we recorded if you speak professionally, because I got to tell you, with no false flattery, and I'm not blowing smoke up your butt, that was one of the best TED Talks I ever saw.
Thank you.
And I feel really fortunate that I got to see it live. And when Jeff gets to watch the video, when it's up on YouTube or TED or wherever it's going to be, he's going to be jealous. But it was an amazing talk. And you were the, I don't know if they would call you the feature speaker, but you were the last speaker, and you just brought the house down.
Thank you. That's nice to hear. Sometimes when you're up there and there's all the lights and you can't even see what's going on, you know, my experience is I just have to kind of check with my own experience about how did that go. And
I did sitting in the audience. I wondered what that was like. So you couldn't really see anybody out there, but could you hear? Did you know your jokes were like hitting it and killing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you knew you were doing well.
Yeah.
And while you were giving your talk, basically there's a gigantic screen behind you, which is showing your comics. Mm-hmm. And I do want to also let people know sort of what my experience was when your agent called me. And I want to give a shout out to Beth for the introductions that she does for me with amazing people. Beth Grossman, I love you. So she said, like, have you heard of Leah Perlman? And she does this thing called Dharma Comics. And I said, no, but it's got Dharma in it. That's like one of my favorite words. So it's got to be cool. So my impression, because I read comics when I was a kid, was like, oh, it's Dharma Comics. It's like superheroes and they fucking have these spiritual lessons that they offer. And when I went to your website, I was not disappointed so much. It was just like, oh, that was not at all what I was expecting. And what I found was just beautiful simplicity. Mm. You draw these very, very simple drawings. And I mean, you use stick figures, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. And do you have any background in art or just...
Definitely not visual art. Right. I'd say I've written a lot in my life as a hobby. I started a blog as soon as blog was a word, pretty much. So right. I've always liked... paying attention to my experience and finding a creative way to share it.
Right.
But yeah, art, no. I mean, they're stick figures because I could draw stick figures. That's why I started drawing comics.
And again, that's one of the things that I really love about this, because I've said this, I've been teaching you for many years, and I've said this many times, but the truth is always simple. Mm. And I think that when people look at your drawings and your comics, they're going to see a really simple truth. So I guess I got to say, that's why I'm really pissed at you.
Tell me.
Because I'll sit here and struggle, mm-hmm. like, to try to convey an idea to yoga students and just, like, explain it in a way that can really hit home. And I'm, like, I'm just in front of my students and, like, I'm wrestling with words and ideas. And you draw a fucking stick figure and you just nail it.
Well, I have to say, so I have a bit of a cheat, which is that I do all of that wrestling and exploring and experimenting and figuring out and banging my head against emotional walls, and all of that happens, but privately, mostly with my friends and in retreats and all that stuff. So by the time I'm drawing a comic, I've just gone through it to get to that essence, and then I only have to come out with the pearl of wisdom at the end of each little journey.
Okay, so you said you cheat.
Yeah.
So cheaters never prosper. But I think in your case, it's quite the opposite, because, like, I think this is really doing well. I think this idea is going to grow and spread. I'm going to do everything I can to, like, throw this book in people's face and just say, look at this. Because after the TED Talk, and again, I told you this off air, but I went home. And it was my first chance to really see a full body of your work in my hands versus, like, seeing a little cartoon. We're also here with Anthony, our engineer, who doesn't have a mic, but we met, like, I don't know, like a week ago, Anthony? 5 days ago? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And I showed you the video that is on your website of you drawing the comics. Mm-hmm. And, like, he had the headphones on the laptop so that he could hear. And I couldn't hear what was going on in the video, but I knew every time he laughed that he was looking at one of your comics. Mm. And so it's really beautiful what you do. So I got the opportunity, like I said, after the TED Talk to just go home and sit with the book. And I don't do this often, but, like, I literally made myself a cup of hot chocolate and I sat down in my chair.
Marshmallows?
No marshmallows. Okay. Like, you know, I'm straight up just, you know. And I read the entire book from cover to cover, and I just felt like my heart expanding and lifting, like it was a balloon that just mm-hmm. couldn't burst. Mm-hmm. It could just keep filling with helium and keep floating up. So I want you to know, that is the feeling that you give people.
That I appreciate that.
And I was in the audience, mm-hmm. and what people who are going to watch the video of your TED Talk are not going to get a good sense of is just how you made people feel during your talk and after your talk because people were elated. People were euphoric. But can we, I'd like to take a step back.
Okay.
Because we have another story to tell. Actually, you have a story to tell. Because I don't think you started out to do this, right?
No.
Tell us about college and then after.
Yeah. So I was always a math and science kind of kid, I thought. In college, I ended up studying computer science, and which was a bit of a random thing. It wasn't necessarily a plan. It was just I had an amazing introduction class with a teacher who really encouraged women in computer science. And so I got kind of caught up in that community. And also being a woman in computer science, there was just like a lot of validation and praise and encouragement to stay in the field. And so I kind of went with it, like rode the wave. When I graduated from college, I got a job working for Microsoft. And I was there for 2 years, and my plan was always 2 years, and then I'm going to figure out what I really want to do with my life. Because I knew somewhere, I'm like, I never really planned to go work at the big corporation, or this wasn't exactly, I don't remember dreaming about this as a kid.
Sure.
But
yeah, people dream of being astronauts and princesses, and you know, they don't dream of working for Microsoft. But I can see like getting out of college, that would be very exciting.
It was exciting, and it was, you know, I was really grateful for it because it was, I mean, it was a nice place to work. People are smart and engaged, and it also helped me save some money while I started to think about what I really wanted to do. But I wasn't, I was kind of stumped on that. So as my 2 year internal deadline was approaching, I thought, well, I just have to leave. Maybe I'll go travel. And at the time, I had some friends who had gone to Harvard with Mark Zuckerberg, and he had recruited them to come work for Facebook, which was basically a startup at the time, really a small company. So when I heard they were going to interview.
But Facebook is what again?
Facebook is what.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Which is pretty much how a lot of people responded back
then. At the time,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, because it was a, it was still just college only, and it hadn't been open to the general public. So if you were in college, you knew it, and that was about it.
Right.
But I appreciated having been a tech person. I did know there was something special about the site. It felt really good to me. Now that I do comics, I actually really see the relationship because they're. Emphasis on simplicity and clarity, and it's been a value I probably learned working for Facebook, where I ended up going.
Right.
I had an interview set up, and I almost didn't go because I thought, nope, I need to travel. I need to figure out who I am. And my mom encouraged me, just go to the interview, just check it out.
Sure.
And she likes to take credit for that because I went, and I was like, this is amazing. Yeah, so I ended up going to Facebook early on and working there for a number of years.
Okay.
Yeah. But that thought, that itch, like who am I again? What do I care about? Where do I want to end up? I mean, you mentioned princesses. That's what I remember wanting to be when I was little. And maybe an actress, and maybe, I don't know, I like to play a lot and dance. And, you know, I did take a few art classes when I was 6 or 7, that kind of thing. And I sort of felt like I'd lost track of that once I got on a treadmill of, you know, okay, more grades, better grades, SAT tests, college exams. Okay, now we're in company reviews, you know, ROI or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
So I the more I got caught up in that stuff, I sort of lost track of.
And it's very clear now, and it's very clear in your talk how you were talking about how like it was just about achievement and approval and doing everything that you thought you were supposed to do. And
and it gets confusing because when you do things that are sort of objectively, I don't know if you say objectively, but that a lot of people think are cool and they tell you it's cool. If my experience is, if I'm not feeling really satisfied, I wonder if something's wrong with me because everyone's saying, oh my God, everything you're doing is so amazing. So I started to have this kind of internal schism, like, why aren't I feeling amazing?
Right.
And that's Dharma Comics was born in that time. Like I said, I used to do a lot of writing because I was starting to explore, you know, what am I actually interested in? What makes me happy? And in that exploration, I started to notice the problem was not that what I was doing wasn't awesome. It just wasn't fully me.
Right. So you mentioned the word awesome. So can we talk about the awesome button?
Yes, the awesome button.
Tell us the story about Facebook's awesome button.
Yeah. So this may be hard to believe, but there wasn't always a like button on Facebook or on the web. So back, I don't even remember what year anymore, but maybe 2007, 2008, around then. The only thing you could do when someone posted a photo or a status update or a note is leave a comment. And no one thought anything of it. That's just how the internet worked, basically, at the time. But there was a problem with it, which was if someone posted something, people would start to comment, but if they didn't have something particularly interesting or clever to say, they might just say congratulations or congrats, but they might just not say anything at all or I like this. So it became pretty clear to me that many people would see a photo, but only a few people would leave a comment. So the person who posted the photo wouldn't even realize how much response they were getting.
Right.
So we had this idea board in the company. It was an online tool where anyone could post an idea and it might get built. And I put an idea for the awesome button on the idea board. And the button, which is what eventually turned into the like button, pretty much worked. The idea was it would work like it works, only right. It would say awesome instead of like.
Right.
At the time, we were kind of maturing the company.
I like the idea of an awesome button better.
Well, you know.
I think they fucked that up.
I feel like now we could go back to it. At the time, we were all college students, and we were kind of trying to go in a more mature direction. But now I think it could be, you know, kind of retro.
And now that, I guess the next step after that was very recent, where they have these React buttons, right?
Yeah.
So that... It always seemed a little funny to me that, like, when somebody says, well, my dog just died. Yeah, you can't hit the like button. It doesn't feel, you know?
Yeah.
But I also wonder about sort of this dumbing down of expression. And if I'm right, and maybe you know, emoticons really came from Japan. And then they sort of worked their way over here as a way to quickly express, rather than try to type out a message. You could just put a smiley face like, yeah, that's awesome, or I'm sad. And I'm guessing that Facebook finally adopted that idea that there's multiple ways that you could react. But one point that you made last night was that, and I'm paraphrasing probably badly, you said, well, I post this funny picture on Facebook and I get 50 likes. And then I post another picture and I get 20. And it's like, what happened? Why doesn't anybody like me anymore? Yeah. And it's this, it's a sad thing when we get so pulled into this self-comparison, and that, as you put it far more eloquently than I could, you just get addicted to validation. Right? Yeah. Or you start to need more and more of it because you get used to it. The same way that you would get used to fucking heroin or a drug, like you just build up a tolerance to it. And then you just have to keep ramping it up and getting more and more and more. So to me, it was kind of, you deserved the huge round of applause when you revealed that the awesome button really is the like button. And that was your idea. And I also, I felt pride that like you had contributed to society in such a huge way, but I also don't know if it is the healthiest thing. And we had a guest on our podcast, it's at least a year ago, and we did a podcast with this woman called Rachel Ruff, and she wrote a book called Defriending Facebook, where she had developed a very serious addiction to social media, particularly to Facebook, and that she was always trying to validate herself, and she was always checking it and always trying to create the photo that would get the biggest reaction and the most likes. And then it's just like, and then you're like I said, you're chasing the dragon. So how do you feel about the like button now? Like, what is your personal take on it now?
You know, for me, it's a practice. It's It's like when I'm on Facebook, there's two ways I can respond to that validation. One is that kind of reactive, addictive, like I needed that and I got it, or did I get enough, and keep checking and refreshing and how many are there now, and responding to those numbers as if they're not people. Like, yeah, it's just the data of my worth.
Oh, that's good. The data of my worth. Yeah, that's a problem, right?
Yeah. And I notice, and again, it's a practice, but when I pay attention to that, it just doesn't feel good. So it's kind of like, you know, if you eat donuts for breakfast, it's like they might be delicious. And I do this regularly. I just want to say I love donuts for breakfast. But I have to pay attention to if it stops feeling good, or if it starts feeling, it's not actually filling me, to stop and, you know, switch to something that's actually nourishing me. So
right,
if I'm paying attention to it in the way that I'm really connecting with people as they say like, or I'm really taking in just there's all these people out there trying to communicate to me, like, I love you and I like that. And if I really take that in as love, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like walking down the street and having people smile.
Right.
So it's a practice to receive it as a way that actually fuels me. And if I find myself, you know, checking my phone a lot or on my computer, it's like now it's airplane mode, move it away, get away. Cause I'm just interfacing with it in a way I feel self-destructive.
Right.
But I personally don't blame the medium, because I think we're humans and we do that. Somebody said this to me the other day, we spend all of our time either trying to look good or not looking bad. And that's just a bit of the human experience. And we'd find a way to do that like button or no.
Yeah. And I don't want to dwell on Facebook the whole time, but the destructive aspect of it, and I think Jeff has done a very good job of talking about this, is how what it simply becomes is this lifestyle envy. Because we only put on Facebook us fucking at the beach in Mexico, YOLO, living the life, you know, and the selfie, not of our face, but of our toes as we gaze out at the beach. And it becomes this lifestyle obsession. And we've scientifically proven through study that Facebook causes depression. Mm. Because we are always seeing the best aspects of people's lives and then trying to measure ourselves up against that. So that's why I feel, and for those of you that can't see this, I'm holding up this book. This book. This is Dharma Comics by Leah Perlman, and the book is called Drawn Together. And this is this a compilation of your work to date, or just some of your favorite work?
Some of my favorite work, and it's some of my favorite work over the last 7 years. And then a good percentage of it is some that I've never published before. So stuff that I drew just for the book.
Okay. So I guess what I'm trying to ask you is there a volume 2 going to be coming anytime soon? Or I really hope there is, because as I said, if there is some disorder to the way we live today and the way we use social media that can be destructive, I think that this is the antidote. Hmm. And as I said before, I think that the truth is always simple, and your comics are either like one comic on one page, or it's a panel on one page and then a panel on the other page. And they're just so beautiful. And I sat there last night and I was trying to take notes and go like, okay, I really want to ask you what you were thinking when you did this one. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't pick them. Mm-hmm. They're all so good. But you had said that you started drawing, just doodling, mm-hmm. to try to process your feelings. Mm-hmm. So when did you realize that this was what you do, at least now?
You know, it's interesting, because I was kind of a validation, kind of definitely a validation junkie.
Yes.
I was very protective of this being the thing that I did, because if it was my thing, I think I might have accidentally needed it to be something.
Yeah.
So I kept it very, it was a practice of, this is my medicine. I draw these for me. I share them because I feel connected in that experience.
Yeah.
But the moment it's not serving my own growth, it's not interesting to me anymore. I can't sit down and draw. It's not like, I'm just going to come up with a comic today. It's never like that.
Yeah.
It's, something's happening and I really need to make sense of it. And the images of the words start to come through that inquiry process.
Right.
So kind of to answer two questions at once, I can't know at this point if there's going to be a second book because it's, I draw as needed. And, sometimes that the drawing is the medium that I need for the healing. Sometimes it's an honest conversation with someone.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that.
So if there is no other book and we're assuming you're still drawing, do people go to Facebook to see your latest Dharma comic?
Yeah, so
what's the best way?
So for 7 years, and I'll keep doing this as long as it's alive in me, I publish a comic or a piece of writing with comics, an illustrated piece of writing, about once a week to dharmacomics.com and to Facebook. So if you sign up newsletter, you just get a comic. I know I probably could use it more for marketing, but I just haven't done that. So you'll only get the comic or the blog post pretty much.
Right.
Or sign up on Facebook, but, yeah, so that's where I publish most of my comics. That's sort of the nice thing about not having a book. I don't feel like I need to save any for a future public date. So now anything I draw or write, you'll see it right away.
Mm-hmm. So when you're considering ideas, do you consider ideas? Do you just sit and like hang out in the park and look up at the sky, meditate, or do you have a eureka moment where you're not trying to reflect on that and you just happen to have just sort of this instantaneous truth? Because just the way my process works when I'm offering the Dharma that I do to my yoga students or through the podcast, it seems to me like they just pop up in the strangest places. Like I make this connection if I'm on an escalator or somebody drops their glass, like it just, like there's just this shocking sort of moment where I just notice something and then I sort of go, oh wait, there's something there. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised to find them mm-hmm. when I find them is what I mean. So what is that process like for
you? Yeah, that's pretty much exactly my experience. I was thinking recently that, you know, it's funny, we have how many moments of a life, just like millions, I don't even know, but a life is made up of so many moments, and yet some we remember, like some small fraction, and we're telling our life story, and then this happened, and then she said that one thing, and then my mom looked at me that one way. We're talking about like it's fraction of a percent of moments of our life that actually really impact us.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's, you know, or, you know, anyone listening who maybe doesn't think of themselves as an artist, to me, it's that simple. It's those moments that suddenly you're awake to them and you know something here is special, something here is different, whether it's, you know, the moment you're on the escalator and have the insight about some, I don't know what that moment would be, but,
right.
You know, I have one in my book about, when my dad was passing away, there was just a lot of, he was just feeling very sad and very scared. And I just remember being around him in his fear.
Yeah.
And my dad was always just a very strong, very hilarious, upbeat person. So it was new to see him that way. And I remember laying on the floor of an airport and just feeling my own sadness and thinking of him and his sadness and just, that feeling of being just almost shattered, like we don't know what to do. And the word shattered came to my mind. And mm-hmm. it just struck me because it was just a strong word. And then the words just sort of poured in, you know, I wanted to comfort him. I wanted to comfort me. Even when you're shattered, I still love you.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I draw comics and because I've gotten the hang of kind of thinking of how might I illustrate this, I tried to think of other things that are beautiful when they're shattered. And I thought of light and a prism.
Yeah.
And so the comic, even when you're shattered, you're beautiful, showing the sunlight being shattered by a prism into this rainbow. you know, just sort of laying there through that experience of picturing someone that I love being shattered and still beautiful to me.
Right. That is really beautiful. And thank you for sharing that story, because that is one of those comics, just like many in your book, where I was like, I wonder what the story is behind that.
You know, I want to say one other thing, because you mentioned how Facebook can create this envy thing because we're always showing the best parts of ourselves.
Yeah.
And that definitely was my experience. And I think one reason Dharma Comics was so healing for me was, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I found it taxing to always have to show a happy face. Like, after a while, it was kind of like, no, I'm sad right now. I just got dumped. Yeah. This, can I drop F-bombs?
What's that?
Can I drop F-bombs? F-bombs? Can I drop F-bombs?
Can you drop F?
Yeah.
No, I'm the only fucking guy on this podcast that can say fuck.
Well, now the
of course you can. Just boom, drop it.
Okay, great. So, yeah, so I just got dumped. This fucking sucks. And I don't want to pretend like, yay, I'm going to learn from this. Well, I just want to tell you that my heart is broken right now and
right.
It sucks. And sometimes I don't want to be, I don't want everyone to know my business,
right.
But I can draw a stick figure with a broken heart and everyone can have their own experience and they can know me without having to, you know me too well more than I want to be known. So it was a way for me to actually show up in the world and literally on Facebook in a way that to me felt more well-rounded and also then felt more healing and way less taxing than having to do that everything's awesome game.
Yeah. Yeah. Unlike the Lego movie, everything is awesome. and we do, we want people to think that I don't know. I even though I understand the psychology behind it, I just don't get it, you know? But, when you said that, even when you're shattered, you're beautiful. I can draw a couple of, comparisons dharma wise, but like I said, that's why I look at your book and I go, God dang it. It's like there's just such a simpler way to say that. But I remember one time watching a glass shatter and thinking to myself, well, I hope that somebody recycles that glass. And when I thought about the process of the glass, like you got a couple of choices. Your drinking glass breaks, and that's its purpose. It's to get fluid to your lips so you can drink it, right? That's its purpose, you know? And if it breaks, it's lost its purpose. And you have two choices. You can either try to glue that glass together, and it's probably not gonna look the same. And it's probably gonna be leaky, and it just won't make a good glass again. But you can melt it down and it could become something else. It could become a plate, a window, you know, anything else. And it can have a completely different purpose. Maybe it's new purposes to be melted down and be a vase for flowers. Mm-hmm. And so when I thought about that, I realized like that's kind of what we do. And maybe it's over melodramatic, but I feel like in a sense, that's kind of what you did when you reinvented yourself, right? From being the girl at Facebook who creates the like button, which, like I said, we don't need to debate the merits of it, but you became this person who draws truth using stick figures oftentimes. And I'm just in love with that idea. Mm-hmm. And you always know, like when I'm teaching a yoga class and I'm trying to express a dharma and I just don't get it right. It's like when you're talking to a friend of yours, but your sentences don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. They're like, what? You know, like my student, I often see their eyes and it's like, what are you trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dang it. I just can't figure out how to get this out, you know? But, That was one of those moments where I feel like I really sort of hit the nail on the head where like, and it's okay to melt down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do to become something else, you know?
Yeah, last night, it just reminds me, one of the other speakers at the TED event, I think she quoted Louis Pasteur, I think that's who it was, something like, favor fortunes the prepared mind.
Yes.
Or something like that. Yeah. And I think since I've been doing these comics, that experience of like trying to communicate something and it's just not coming out right, to me is a bit of the preparation. It's like, I'm trying to figure this out and like, what, why do I do this again? And why am I so upset? Or whatever that inquiry is, why do I feel this pain? And just sort of exploring, let's say, the non-truth, all the stuff that's packaged around the truth, and keep going, like trying to explain it and trying to understand it. And for me, it's that process. Then suddenly it allows for those moments of the broken glass of insight. And in my experience, they're not unrelated. It's almost like that trying and exploring and messing up. And last night, my TED talk, you know, I did 8 different drafts of a talk until I got to the truth of what I was trying to say before, you know, landing on that message.
See, that's what I'm not doing. I don't have 8 drafts of my yoga class. I just fucking, I try it and like, I'm like, oh, that one fell flat. You know, that was, but it is. I don't know what it's like to try to prepare a TED talk other than the fact that I picked up a book that I haven't read yet that I want to read on how to tell a story, like using, you know, the tools that are employed when people give a TED talk. I think that there is sort of like this algorithm to it, right?
I think there definitely is. My best friend is a writer, and so I've been learning a lot about that. I also, my experience is more like the more honest I get, it feels like this. There's a reason that there's that rubric. It's because it sort of aligns with the way that we think about things. So
right.
I think you can go at it either way. I notice my heart tends to tell stories with beginnings, climaxes, and ends when I'm really paying attention. I don't know why that is. But when I get into, that's what it is. When I get into the business of trying to tell a story for someone else, like I want to get this message so they understand something, then it gets all distracting and hard. Uh-huh. When I'm really like, wait, what do I want to say?
Yeah.
What do I want to say? That's when the message starts to flow much more naturally.
Well, let me ask you this. When do you know, I guess you said that like you, the idea has to be fully formed in your mind. It's even on the video on your website. Like you'll just sit there until you can see the entire comic in your mind and then you draw it, which is really just this powerful reminder that we can manifest anything that we have in our mind. And people might say to themselves, well, she just sees a comic of stick figures in her head and then she draws it. And I'm like, it's my life isn't that easy. And I disagree. I think it is. You see what you want and either you draw it or you create it or you don't. And then you sort of live with this nagging thing that, I think, Dr. Wayne Dyer said it, and maybe he wasn't the first, don't die with your music left in you, you know? So you draw out these comics and sometimes I went through a plethora of emotions as I could see that there was heartbreak in some of them. And, I could see that there was incredible beauty and inspiration in some of them. Have you ever thought of an idea that you just haven't figured out how to express yet in a comic?
Yeah. I keep a list of those.
Like, I got to go back to that one. Cause
yeah.
I blog too. And I've been really remiss in my writing cause there's just a bunch of other, things moving in my life. But like I literally, so that I don't lose an idea or if I'm still struggling with an idea, I literally text myself.
Uh-huh.
I send myself a text and it could be just simple as like kite, a puzzle. You know, or it could be sentences or words or whatever, but, so you keep a list of ideas that are still trying to form.
Yeah. It's interesting. I keep a list of ideas, you know, maybe I have about 12 or 15 at any given time that are sort of waiting for attention.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll go back and look at it and they just have no energy in them anymore and I'll delete them. Sometimes I can still feel the charge. And sometimes for me, Dharma Comics, it's just a series of lessons that I've learned. So when I look at them and I don't know what to draw yet, it means I haven't learned that lesson yet.
Oh man, that was good. Come on. That was good. Anthony, come on. That was good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, I was just telling a friend last night, so the cover of the new book has this little stick figure who's holding a balloon with a heart. And that came from years ago, a friend, she had a tattoo of a heart, and it was meant to remind her of a hard time in her life. And she never wanted to forget this hard thing that happened. I don't know what it was. But she came to me and she asked me if I could, she wanted to transform the heart into something more hopeful and if I could draw something. So I drew this stick figure. I turned the heart into a balloon and drew the stick figure hanging onto the string, which to me felt uplifting.
Exactly.
I actually don't know. I imagine she would have told me if she got the tattoo. I don't think she did, but I kept that image and I just loved it so much, but I never had a caption for it. I never had a reason to use it. And then when it was time for the book to come together, the designer at the publisher had this idea. We were thinking something with clouds and maybe like heart balloons. And I was like, oh, yes, I have this guy that I love. And so sometimes it works like that. Like if I just hold the image or hold the caption, could take years. But I'm amazed. Some of the images in my talk are that way too. I just, something I drew but never used.
Right.
And they just weren't ripe yet.
So do you remember the first one you ever drew and showed to people, like on Facebook?
I do, yeah.
May I ask, what was it?
So what happened was, before the very first one, I had, for the first time in my life, started keeping a gratitude journal. And I would write a list of things I was grateful for. I'm grateful for, blah, 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 blah. Well, that got...
And I gotta stop you. Everybody should be doing that. Everybody should be reflecting on gratitude every day. Go, sorry.
So I would say it was a really good practice, and I would offer that in my experience, when I was doing it from this, oh yeah, everyone should reflect on things that they're grateful for, I felt like I was like in third grade and my substitute teacher was making me make a list of words that ended in T-I-O-N, which was the most annoying assignment ever, just to keep us quiet for an hour, because there are a lot of words that end in T-I-O-N if you ever want to try it. And I was very competitive.
Like so, aggravation?
Exactly. So I'm sitting there like, I hate this assignment. I feel stupid and I'm going to win.
And I'm going to win. Because I, even though I don't like it, I'm going to be the best at it.
Exactly. So, so I had that experience actually with gratitude journals. I just felt like I was confined to this like format of something that didn't feel very authentic. So to just entertain myself, they started getting just a little more interesting. Like I remember I made a crossword puzzle of the things I was grateful for one day and just made clues. And it was just three things, but I just made this little crossword puzzle. It was just more interesting for me to find a new way to express my gratitude. I would take a picture and I'd post it on Facebook, and then I would tag the people that I was saying thank you to.
Right.
So I was doing that for about maybe a couple months. And one day, the thing I was grateful for was that the doctor called my dad and said the cancer tests were clean. It had gone into remission.
Yeah.
So I just made a little comic strip about that news. Cancer was calling my dad on the phone, and my dad said, you have the wrong number, and hung up the phone. It wasn't particularly clever or funny. It was terribly drawn. But it was a way for me to, one, just express gratitude, which was my practice, and say thank you. I don't even know to who, but just thank you that cancer went away. And I hadn't really even realized that not even a lot of people knew I was going through that in my family.
Right.
So it was kind of the first instance of something vulnerable, something I'm revealing, add some humor so it doesn't feel too dramatic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that one just, you know, not that I was looking, but it got a lot of likes. And that was the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned the word when you're talking about your ideas, you said the inquiry.
Yeah.
And that's something else that people, they just have to learn how to do again, is to be curious. And we grow up and we think we've got it all figured out. And I've been learning for 4 years since my daughter came into this earth that like, it's not my job to make her like me. It's my job to become more like her and remember what that's like again and to be curious about everything, because my daughter thinks the world is amazing and we forget, you know?
Well, I think in the spirit of inquiry, One thing I've found lately, I would say it's my primary practice, and it can be a bit of a buzzword. So what I mean by that when I say inquiry, and we could even use this as an example, might be something like, how might curiosity help me today? And that might be a question that I'm genuinely curious. Like, you know, you just heard us say, inquiry is good. Everyone should be more curious. So if somebody said that to me, I might take it to inquiry, you know, should I have more inquiry in my life? And then just see what happens. See if asking questions actually helps that day, or if curiosity actually helps. And if it doesn't, toss it out. And that's what I love about inquiry. It's like anything anyone says to you, or anything anyone says to me, can become a question. I don't have to know the answer right away. I can just ask, huh?
Live in the mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, was I being selfish? You know, if somebody says that felt selfish, it's like I could say, well, I wasn't selfish, and this is actually what it meant, or I can just say, huh, how was that selfish?
Oh, thank you for that, because I don't think people realize that it's really, if you want to grow, you've got to have that reflection. Like, am I like that? How can I do better than that? I have a great friend, and I'm going to give a shout out to Joe Cousineau. And a lot of times when we're working out in the morning, like I'll teach him yoga and somebody will show up late and he'll just yell in the yoga class, you're better than that, you know? And we have to ask ourselves that. Am I better than that?
Mm.
Yeah, I think I am. I think I can be better than that. And it's good. Self-reflection. Jeff, if he were here, would say, he would quote, was it Plato or Socrates? The unexamined life isn't worth living. I always get that wrong. I'm just going to say Socrates, Socrates. And Jeff says, but the examined life will make you want to kill yourself. Like, because if you go in and you look, you're going to find some stuff that you're like, oh, God, man, I just didn't show up there.
You know, that's just even hearing you say that, I hadn't thought of it that way, this way, but I think that's one reason why having something like a way that feels really sweet to be with that inquiry has been so supportive. Because if I'm just sitting there with my head in my mind and thinking about this stuff, it can get it can sometimes get a little self-abusive. Like if I find something that I feel embarrassed about, I can spiral. But if I'm like, I'm going to make this funny, damn it. Somehow I'm going to make this light. So I really have to sit in the inquiry, the self-inquiry. How did I create this situation? I'm in a conflict right now with my best friends. It feels awful.
Yeah.
How did I create this? And where's the lightness in it? Because I'm going to need that if I'm going to draw a comic about it.
Right.
So having whatever that means, like, you know, if you love running or you love dancing or doing it alongside something that feels gentle, I think is like it's a huge support because self-inquiry can be risky if it's not done in the context of sweetness, I think.
Do you feel like you've nailed this lesson that really I think was the culmination of your talk, which is, I'm enough? It's a very personal question. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there.
And it's a great question for inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately my answer is no, I have not nailed this question. Frequently I find myself in the experience of not feeling like enough. And it's a practice. I guess I'm into practice lately, but you know, it's like yoga. It's like you never get there. There's no there to get. So whenever I notice that I'm not enough, so either I'm not enough, I'm believing it, I'm not enough, I suck, oh my God, I did this awful thing, and I'm in that. But then at some point I'll notice, oh, wait a minute, I'm doing that thing. There are these thoughts that are in my head and they're telling me something and they're not real. If I look around, they're not even anywhere. Where are these thoughts?
Right.
Who are you? Who's talking to me right now? And I start to be like, wait a minute, this is an experience. This isn't truth.
Have you ever read The Untethered Soul?
I love that book.
Yeah, because as I look at the cover of your book, that you've drawn pretty much the stick figure, like beautiful, simplistic, and whimsical version of that.
Yeah, wow.
And it must be a practice for you, because before we recorded this podcast, you took my yoga class, and I could tell two things. One, it was unlike the way that you're most familiar with practicing, and two, you just kept smiling at yourself. So what was it that you were experiencing as when it felt difficult or it felt like you were going to fall over, when you just sort of smiled at yourself and sort of like forgave yourself for not being able to be totally graceful all the time? Mm-hmm. What was that process?
Well, you mentioned it in class a few times, and it's become a practice of mine, like, this isn't serious. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, when you're sitting there trying to balance on one foot with your one foot pressed against your other leg and you're shaking and you're wobbling in the mirror, and it's like, it's so funny. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. And especially the fact that we take it seriously, that's even funnier.
It is.
Picture, like, if any other organism, you know, if you were watching your cat try to do the same thing, it would be a YouTube phenomenal, you know, sensation. So it's hilarious that this animal is sitting here trying to do this silly thing and being so serious about it. And so, I think this is another thing that I think self-inquiry can do.
I wish Anthony had a mic over there, because he just can't stop laughing. So we'll have to find out that later. When in future podcasts, we're going to mic you. Just stop. You're distracting me.
Well, I was just going to say, so one thing that I think is neat is I've found you can start to hook your inner, rewire your brain to have inner reactions mean new things. So like I described earlier, when I'm starting to feel a lot of pain, now I'm like, there's a comic here. So I'm in pain, but I'm also feeling creative and open, because I've learned to hook those two things.
And
I
hope you're also having the thought that, like, my pain can become healing for others, because I can show them that there's a way through this and that it's common. I think that's the one thing we're always convincing ourselves in our moments of self-doubt and pain. And sometimes it's even that self-reflection when you find a shadow part of yourself that you're not too terribly proud of. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, so to be honest, in my experience, for my own healing, it is very helpful for me to leave everybody else out of it. Mm-hmm. So the moment I start thinking, like, how is this going to help other people? If I'm really in pain, I leave my own experience.
Oh, yeah.
And so I used to do that sometimes, but then I'd start trying to curate it before I'm actually really through the experience. Right. So I just wanted to say, I think it's nice that you can connect with other people and share, but for me, I will literally tell myself, if I'm suffering in some way, no one else matters. Leave everybody out of this. Come home. Feel your feelings. This is just for you. You can't do this wrong. Mm-hmm. Take your time.
See, this is a perfect example of how I had a point and I was very clumsy with it. It was really more the fact that when you do navigate through it, it's obviously it becomes, if you become self-aware of how that could affect others, then it's going to pull you out of the experience you're trying to process, right? But that really is the beauty of going through those pains and those experiences, because then it becomes wisdom for someone else. Mm-hmm. But you have to have processed it and gone through it. It's like you're lighting a path for somebody else, you know, but you're first lighting it for yourself, and then other people can follow. That's really what I meant.
Yeah. And I'm glad you bring that up, because I draw comics, but I would say my full-time job is the self-inquiry. And to me, that requires, I go to a lot of different kinds of retreats. I have a lot of teachers. I read a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm in those tough places, it's those teachers and the words they said, or a loving friend. It's it's there I go for, how do I get through this? Because when my mind and my self-critic are acting up, it's not helpful.
Right.
So to me, it's my teachers. You know, what would Byron Katie say about this? What would the Buddha say about this? What would my best friend Joanna say about this? And looking for more healthy voices. And so then the idea that something I've said or some these comics can be one of those voices for someone else in that period, that just gave me chills just thinking about that.
What are you feeling now that this book is out in the world? This thing that just started out as a way to process it. It started out as a path to self-discovery, mm-hmm. and reflection and inquiry. I love that word. I'm gonna be using that a lot in yoga classes. And Anthony's gonna know why the fuck I keep saying the word inquiry. But what? Now that this beautiful book is out, like, what's next for you?
Well, I'm going to have lunch with a friend. And yeah, that's, you know, a bit of this comic process.
You said in your TED Talk, and, you know, it was, I don't know, like 15 minutes long. One of the things that I really attached to and thought to myself, I just don't want to forget she said this. And because you tell your parents this, you tell other people this, and they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why don't you have goals? But you said, like, I don't really know what's going to happen. I don't know what my next thing is. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I latched onto is the reminder that you just gave me, which is like, what are you going to do now that your book, which might even be this great bestseller and everyone's going to talk about it, and you're going to be on TV. What are you going to do? I'm going to go to lunch with a friend. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so delighted and honored that I got the chance to meet you again. Beth, thank you. Please keep sending me people like Leah because she's extraordinary. And I want everyone to please go to dharmacomics.com. And if you have a newsletter, right? Sign up for that newsletter so that you can get this weekly dose of whimsy and sweetness and seeing that your experience is not your experience alone, and that other people feel those joys and they experience those fears and they process those pains. And that's part of the human experience is what brings us together. Mm-hmm. But the book is called Drawn Together. And when will it, I'm a lucky son of a gun. I tell myself that every day now, every day. But I'm a lucky son of a gun because I got one of the first copies mm-hmm. of this book. Mm-hmm. When will it be in bookstores?
So it releases October 4th. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 2.5 weeks.
All right. So yeah. Everybody, we're going to, once we get this up.
Can I just say one thing?
No, we're done. I'm just... I still find it funny that you asked me permission to drop an F-bomb. No, please plug so anything.
So you had said a number of times that you fumbled for the simple in your yoga class. And I just wanted to share, I got one of the images you used today. It's completely going to change my yoga practice.
What is that?
That was for Shavasana. You said, just melt like the butter. How'd you say it?
I said, melt like butter in the sun.
Melt like butter in the sun. It was the best, most descriptive. Like, oh, now I get Shavasana. And from now on, that's going to be my Shavasana practice. So I just wanted to thank you for that simple image that will change my yoga practice.
You heard it here. If there's a Dharma comic about butter melting in the sun, that was me. And I want some fucking validation for it. Okay, that was me. But it is funny that the one thing I did do after I read your book, and I was just like, how the fuck do I sleep? Because I'm in this euphoric state of like loving life. And it made me realize that a lot of the things that I do say in yoga class, like if I could just draw a picture of it, you know, because I tell people all the time, like your body, you think you're trying to get your body more flexible. And after I read your book, I saw this stick figure of a girl doing yoga, and she's saying, I'm more flexible. And you can see into her head, and her brain also has a word balloon, and it says, me too. Because that's what we're trying to do, is really just get more flexible, more open, and that this manifestation, or what we think we're manifesting on the mat, like, is nothing compared to what I hope it's doing for our hearts and minds. And again, without beating a dead horse, don't ever draw that one. That would be that would be really awkward. But I'm delighted to have met you. I feel very fortunate to have met you. And I told you after I was on your website and I showed it to Anthony, and then I called you, I said, do you like the White Stripes? He said, I don't dislike them. I said, because I have a feeling we're going to be friends. Thank you so much for being on Dharma Porn. It was great.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here. Ha 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 ha!